Welcome to One Decent Pastor, a weekly podcast of The Door located in Central Oregon, where three completely average guys join forces to make one decent pastor and to discuss, discover, and promote all things Bible.
We are ready on One Decent Pastor.
Let's get ready.
Let's get ready to rumble.
So are we live?
Yes, we're live.
Okay.
When Chad starts doing that, you know we're live.
Because Chad doesn't do that. Yep, we're live.
You might have got the first phrase in this time, so he didn't know what to do, I think.
Oh, really? Did I get the first phrase in?
Well, you asked if we were ready, and I don't know if it was live yet when you said that, but that's why I started with we're ready.
We're ready.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're live. We're ready. Rumble, whatever.
So very, very seldom do we actually get to talk about everything, a subject, you know, for ODP that we're all experts at. What?
And today's going to be no different.
but I'm sure three of you are experts at this, and so we'll have.
We're a experts lot to at killing marriage. Yeah, that's what it says. Yeah. Killers of marriage. And it's like, yeah, I'm killers. That. Oh. I've killed my marriage multiple times.
Yeah. Right. So that's the name of the subject we're going to be talking about today is killers of marriage.
So we all went away last week with our wives and it was rad.
Oh yeah,
we've had
a week off from the podcast.
Right. We had a week off. Yeah, the conference. We were at a conference. Yeah. Conference was great.
Listeners have had a week off too.
Yeah, we got so many emails from our listeners asking where are you guys. Yeah.
Hopefully,
we got so many emails.
Hopefully they made it. Okay, you know,
they survived.
Survived.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, there's like 2 days of the coast when it didn't rain sideways.
Yeah.
It still rained, but not sideways.
Just not sideways.
Right. Not one night. I think it was Tuesday night or Wednesday night. It was brutal coming home from the conference that night. It was because it was just fog where you couldn't see. It was raining sideways. The wind was crazy. Yeah. And you're just up on those cliffs. And it was gnarly, man. It was bad flooding, like hydroplaning. And it was gnarly. Yeah, it was bad. So, but we made it.
Yeah, and it was a good time away.
It was a great time away.
Yeah,
we had a good time.
Here we are. It was a good conference, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, hey, look, it was one
of those ones that progressively got better, like a progressive dinner, as it went on. Yeah.
But like all conferences, I mean, there's parts of it that are really good, and there's parts of it that are kind of...
Like the business meeting? Like that?
You didn't like the business meeting?
Dude, I got up part. And I did some things. No, I'm just kidding. I stood in the back for it. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's shocked that David didn't like the business meeting. Right.
Graphs and charts. Chad's like, this is awesome.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I'll see you guys later.
Yeah, right.
I am a graph and chart kind of guy.
Yeah. Dude, you're so nerdy, bro.
Yeah.
White and nerdy. Brown and nerdy.
Yeah. I try to hide my nerdiness, but I guess I don't hide it all that well.
How do you do with charts, Brent?
You're being quiet
over there.
I like a good spreadsheet.
You do?
I use them all the time. Actually, I took all of our receipts for the trip and put them all down with the dates. And
made a spreadsheet.
Made a spreadsheet. Sent it to Janet.
Two receipts I didn't put in, actually. I'm sorry.
That's between you and Janet.
Well.
I think I got most of them. So you only had two receipts, which is amazing.
Yeah. Two gas fill-ups.
Yeah.
That's it. We bought. Yeah.
If you can send them to Janet, that'd be great.
I will. Yeah. I shall
so
do
Janet,
that.
Janet, if you're watching, you know where to go.
Janet, they're coming.
Yeah.
There you go.
I actually got Janet a receipt as well, not from the trip, but from something else. So I got to get that to her.
I didn't have any. I was just total freeloader.
Yeah. Well, kind of the opposite of that, but thank you.
So we're back.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah, we're back in action. Back
don't burn. Cell. Don't do any yard burning or anything, even though it's March.
Oh, man.
It's not safe.
Yeah.
We learned that. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, Lapine.
Yeah. I called Mike right away because it was right by his house. So I was like, bro, are we good?
I texted him and he's like, we're good.
Yeah.
This time it wasn't him, right?
No, it wasn't. No, sir. It wasn't.
So. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's a possibility this time of year to.
March? Seriously?
Yeah.
If we're doing that in March, then this is going to be a problem.
The thing jumped up to 11 acres pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, I read something about that, and they said that really what matters is when we get late spring, early summer rains.
Yeah, I heard that, too.
More than anything else. Yep. If we get early spring rains, it causes a lot of the vegetation to grow up. And if it dries out, it gets dry, and it's just a tinder box. But if we get late spring, early summer rains, that helps. So that's what we're – am I not – okay, sorry. Let's turn to our subject. How about that?
Go for it.
All right.
Okay. So number one.
Are we going to get through all these?
Why are you looking at me?
Yeah, I'm just asking. Because they're basically just true or false questions, so we're going to get through them.
All right.
We'll go through this fast.
Okay. So the first one is laziness kills marriage.
True. Absolutely.
Yeah, true.
Yep.
Next.
Okay, yeah. I was hoping for more comment than that. So do you think that people enter marriage or actually being in marriage have the working assumption that now that we're married, this thing just kind of goes on its own?
Totally.
Yeah.
Osmosis, yeah.
What's or, fun? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Love takes over, right? Yeah. Like this love thing is going to prevail, and it's like love's an action, like more than it's a feeling. And because it's an action, marriage takes work. Love takes work. Right. Growth in that into that marriage and into that relationship takes work. And so laziness will absolutely kill it. Yeah. Absolutely kill it.
Well yeah, said.
The ironic part to me is that when you're pursuing a person for marriage, you're the opposite of lazy. Like you're putting in so much effort and so much work. You'll do anything, to get the girl.
You'll actually comb your hair.
Yeah, all of it.
Yep.
And then you get married.
Tame your cowlick.
Yeah, tame the cowlick, exactly. And then you get married and you just like, I got the girl, I'm done, and kick your feet up, man, that's a bad plan.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think that's something that's just one of those working assumptions that just happens in marriage, and they get bad just because people aren't working at it. But are we saying it takes constant work?
Intentional.
I think it takes constant work, yeah.
Intentional and constant.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I had somebody one time just, usually when we get marital counseling kind of meetings, it's when things have gone completely bad. And I had a couple one time just say, hey, we just want to meet, we just want a little tune-up on our marriage. Things are going pretty good, but we just thought, we just come and just have get a tune-up kind of thing. And I thought,
how many times
amazing.
Has that ever happened to you?
Once.
Yeah.
But it was great. I thought, what a cool idea. This was like, again, that idea of
preventative
maintenance. Yeah.
Measures or whatever. Yeah. For sure.
Okay, so if you want to make Brent or Chad's day, just call them up and ask to come in for a marriage tune-up, right?
I thought it was cool, but it just shows that they were working on it.
Okay, number two, suspicion kills marriage.
True.
So everybody agrees with that. So what do you do about that to keep suspicion from being, torpedoing your marriage?
I think sometimes our default can be to assume the worst of the other person.
Okay.
Or maybe not even the worst, but just assume, negatively.
Yeah.
That, that they're against me.
Yeah.
Right. You just kind of get there.
Well, suspicion kills any relationship, right? So if you think of it in that those terms, then you can see how it automatically crosses over first and foremost to marriage. So like even here, we've talked about it before. When we're not meeting regularly, my head can start thinking weird things about what you guys think of me. Right. And so we get together every week, twice a week. We keep short accounts. Communication is rocking. And I think that's how trust happens, right? Is that you've got a good, open, deep relationship.
Yeah. Is it too much of a stretch too to say that there's probably, as you get to know your mate, there's probably things that that bubble up over time that are kind of tender areas for them, and to try to deliberately make sure that you don't give them any fodder for that. Any grounds for that.
Right? Fodder.
Does that make any sense?
Fodder.
I knew I shouldn't have said that when I said that. Okay. So the next one really kind of dovetails on this. And number three in killers of marriage is lack of trust kills marriage.
Isn't that the same thing?
Well, I'm just, hey,
you didn't
just,
write
I just
that, right?
work here.
I mean, that one leads to the one before it.
Right. Okay. So we'll go to the next one. Lack of mutual respect kills marriage.
Sure.
You squeaked, but
you did
then
squeak.
You have to have something to say about it besides
I had to process it for a second, and I still don't know what I'm doing with it on it. Go, Brent. Save us.
I think there always needs to be respect, but I think that this is one of those things where men generally, I think, kind of need this maybe more than women do. I think when you look at the recipe for what marriages need according to the Bible, women generally need to be loved and feel secure and protected and beautiful and all those things, and men generally need to feel respected. And so,
see, I knew I was handing it to you for a reason.
Well, I just
that's the right answer.
It's a big deal when you have the respect of your wife. Sure. And it's a killer when you don't.
Sure.
And so right. an unrespected man, you know, a man whose wife doesn't respect him is just
an unloved woman.
Well, so, it's the same thing, but it's right. an emasculated man, and it's just a beat down woman, sure. not physically, but I mean just that, you know, it just takes a toll. And so this is the this is the recipe God's given us, and it actually works really well. So
and of course the other way, if you don't have a man that respects in just the most basic sense his wife,
sure.
you're gonna have a tyrant. You're going to have a dude that just, right, that mishandles, misuses, mistreats, mistalks to his wife. She's something lesser and lower.
Right.
And so that respect, absolutely, the value component has to be mm-hmm. there both directions, or else something's going to be completely lopsided, which may lead to destruction, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's true. I think that, you know, there's been books that come out that have been very popular about Christian marriage that kind of bifurcate, you know, for the wife, she needs love and the husband needs respect. And that's true in a general sense, but that respect that the husband needs also includes down pyramid love. And the love that the wife needs also includes down, you know, there's respect in there somewhere for the very reason. So I think... I've been a little suspicious of the book because normally, you know, we can take things like that and oversimplify them and, you know, kind of use a meat cleaver on it. Okay, wife, love, husband, respect. There we go.
I like that. That's simple.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So number five, unforgiveness, bitterness, hatred, malice, and anger kill a marriage. I don't know why.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Those aren't fruits of the Spirit.
Not tracking with you.
Okay, let's talk about it. Unforgiveness, bitterness, and hatred.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're horrible. They'll kill any relationship, especially any relationship. A marriage. There.
I mean, at the end of the day, right, as Christians, we bank on that God forgives us. And it's disingenuous for us to not be forgiving to others. And I'm not saying it's always easy, right? It's hard. But it's disingenuous for someone who takes the forgiveness from God to me, for me not to issue forgiveness, you know, to you or to my wife or anybody else. And, you know, we should just be people that are about forgiveness.
Right.
And if we're about forgiveness, then we're going to be, you know, less apt to be bitter and less apt to be angry and those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's Ephesians 4:32 thing. We sometimes want to become, how'd the guy put it, forgiveness reservoirs instead of forgiveness conduits.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like I'll take all I can get, but you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that if you've got unresolved issues in your marriage or conflict, this is where bitterness starts to stir up. And and I know a lot of people, rather than just talk about what's going on or what they're feeling or what they're thinking, that they, you know, give nonverbal cues, hoping that the other person will pick up on them and figure it out. And that's just a bad idea. Right. Again, you know, keeping short accounts like David just talked about and communicating with each other is where this stuff gets out. So if something's bugging you, don't expect them to figure it out. Just talk about it.
Yeah.
And
going back to the laziness kills. To link them up, the unforgiveness is oftentimes that I've forgiven for an offense, but then I remember it a year later or 3 years later, and all those feelings come back up, the hatred, the anger, the bitterness. And so if I'm lazy in forgiving, that's part of the work that has to be done.
It's not one and done?
Nah, it's part of the work that has to be done on that garden, right, is that you're forgiving like over and over again, sometimes for the same offense. Whenever it comes up, and it's work. Sometimes it's tiring, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, we need to not get lazy in, because we don't have good forgetters. We can forgive, but we don't have good forgetters, so we have to keep learning how to forgive for the same thing sometimes. So.
And to Chad's point, the thing we need to keep our eyes on is the way that we have been forgiven by Christ, because if you look at the other person and try to find around, or just, quote, find it in your own heart to forgive them, that ain't working. You know, for long, right? So, okay. There's also a progression here, I think, maybe that, I don't know what was intended or not, but it starts with unforgiveness, then turns to bitterness,
right?
And then turns to hatred, and then malice, which is actually, you know, wanting to do the other person in, right? Okay. Number six.
Well, and then anger. And then you end up on the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, I thought anger
should
have gone in there someplace. Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah, right. Well, I saw the word kill. Yeah. Kill marriage. Yeah. So.
Well, the thing worth mentioning with that progression is that the Bible tells us that when you get married, like the two flesh become one. And so when you get to, you know, unforgiveness and bitterness and anger and malice, like you're shooting yourself in the foot,
yeah.
You know, because you're one flesh with right. your spouse.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the things that in marriage counseling that I've always tried to get across, and it seems to come to this, maybe I'm just laying in wait for it, but that is that, when people come in on opposite sides of something like that, to for that very reason you're talking about one flesh, is to try to get them to agree that there's nothing that's good for the husband that's bad for the wife,
right.
and nothing that's good for the wife that's bad for the husband. It's either a win-win or a loss-loss, right?
Right?
So thanks right. for bringing that up. Okay, unnecessary arguments kill marriage.
or keep them going.
Prolonged argument.
If it becomes something you're good at, if it becomes a hobby, then it can keep you rocking. In fact, it's gosh, we laugh. Check this out. So me and my wife have always been good at this one.
Well, by the grace of God, it
didn't.
It.
By the grace of God, it didn't kill our marriage.
Coming in the future.
But there was a time when I stopped hitting the ball back like I did for all those years, and she actually went like, "What's wrong? You don't love me anymore." Serious. She's like, he doesn't care enough about me anymore to argue about these things. Like, the dude's detached. What do you think of that?
Well, where'd you go with
it? I don't know. Well, I just got sick of it. It was like unnecessary arguments.
But I mean, if that was her response to your, you know, not hitting the ball back,
yeah.
So how did that progress?
I started arguing with her again so that she knew I loved her. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know where I'm going with
you
this.
You should write a book, man.
Like, let's go. Coffee table book.
All right. I tend to think her arguments are unnecessary and mine are necessary. Ooh. So something like mine are good, hers are bad. That's, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I would think.
That's pretty self-righteous of you, Jeff.
It is. Totally.
You should choose your battles is what comes to mind here. You know, there's probably things that are worth having heated discussions over, and there's things that aren't. And, mm-hmm. and if everything becomes a heated discussion, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So,
you know, not everything's a big thing,
yeah,
right?
Pick the things to talk about and then learn to let things go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Number 7, keeping secrets from your spouse kills marriage.
Unless you're a pastor.
Well, okay, there is a...
those aren't secrets.
There's like, a carve-out for that,
it's
right?
Secrets. They are, but they're not really secrets.
When you walk in the door...
Just things they don't
need
to know.
And she's like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And you're like, nothing.
Sure. I know what you mean. But
I'm fine.
Those are things told in confidence. That's a different thing, I guess, but...
Yeah.
Sure, there's a carve-out for that.
Pastoral privilege.
Yeah. But general secrecy in marriage is a killer. And,
right.
and this is something we talk about, you know... We have premarital counseling stuff, and I always talk about this. Your wife needs to know your password on your phone, your computer, whatever it is. Bank accounts. Like now it's a thing where couples get married and have separate bank accounts, which is a really bad idea. Unless there's a practical reason and you both have access to them, it's just secrecy, you know, of any kind is a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of full disclosure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have full disclosure about everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know.
Well, except for...
No, you're right. But we talked about trust earlier and
yep.
suspicion. And
yep, that kills us.
If you're going to eliminate suspicion
right.
and you're going to build trust, then there has to be secrets need to not exist.
Right.
Yeah, we need to know what we got and what they're going through and, you know, where we're at in our marriage.
Right, so. And not keep anything behind door number 3,
that's right.
right, where they're just guessing and the same thing with you. So, yeah.
No, I've seen people be sneaky, you know, in their, whether it can even just be, you know, places they're stopping to get fast food or whatever. And it's just, you know, it creates that non-trust when people figure it out. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, here's an interesting one. Well, they're all interesting, but this one is, okay, infidelity kills marriage. Okay, so we would all, I mean, jump right on that. There's no problem. But in parentheses, it says, financial and emotional. Is there such a thing as financial or, I mean, you were actually talking about that a little bit, Brent, financial or emotional infidelity? What?
Yes. I've never thought about financial. That one's kind of stumping me a little bit, but the emotional one, I know this happens a lot of times in workplaces and things like that, where you develop these kind of friendships with somebody of the opposite sex. And, mm-hmm. and before right. long, you know, you're joking with each other and, you know, you're kind of investing emotionally in somebody and, you got to be really careful with that.
Yep. Not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can happen. I think also, Oh, wait, actually, I cut that one off. Financial, emotional, psychological, material, infidelity. I don't disclose the money that I'm spending on my fishing poles and my, you know, my shotguns and stuff like that. And my closet just keeps up. What's that?
I said, whoa.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Cigars.
Yeah, that's what
so I said.
I mean, for you, not me.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. No, we say when we marry people, the two become one flesh, right? That this has to be a concept that is baked into any successful, sacred covenant that two people are entering into. And I always tell people during that wedding ceremony, from this moment forward, your things are not your own. Your life is not your own. Your bed is not your own. Your finances are not your own. Like it runs the gamut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything that used to be yours, right now you're forfeiting, and it's someone else's too. Right.
Wow.
There's no more. Yeah.
It's good.
And we.
And it makes a good marriage. That's why.
Yeah. And we pledge to that, take our vows to that very thing. And then, you know, as time goes on, it's kind of like, well, nah. You know, yeah. That's still my stuff, yeah. Right?
And that goes on to dreams. That goes on to struggles, right? Sure. It opens up to all these things, that everything.
Well, infidelity itself, I mean, gets back to trust issue, because the root word there is, you know, means trust.
Yeah, I had to check ChatGPT to make sure I knew what infidelity meant in this case.
So okay.
I got it.
All right. Poor communication kills marriage.
I don't know. A lot of men wouldn't agree with that, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and all these things, like has already been said, is true of any relationship, right? There's, you know, communication has to happen.
Yeah, I think this might be one of the leading causes of relationships falling apart is, you know, look at any list, and this is almost always at the top. If you can't talk to your spouse about
anything
and everything, you're going to have problems. You know, you got to be able to, that's your closest friend and confidant, and you got to be able to talk to each other about everything. So,
mm-hmm. Well, talking and listening.
Yeah,
right.
That's where I fall short. Yeah,
well,
apparently.
Yeah, the phone line runs both ways, right?
Right. Well, it should, and so, you know, I know that this is a kind of an old saw, but you know, for years, Nancy and I, you know, I would listen to her about something she was talking about, and then I'd try to fix it, and then I'd be done, you know. And normally I didn't fix it, but that's not even really what she wanted. You know, she just wanted to be heard and responded to, like, yeah. And my feedback not being fix it mode so much as this is what I heard you say. Is that right? You know, and she, you know, if the antenna picked it up, you know, you could just see it on her face like, yeah, that's it. And you kind of go, well, what do we do about this? And it's like, we don't need to do anything about it. You know, just broadcast and receive, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, Peter saying, you know, be understanding with your wife. And I think that's all our wife really needs to know that she has half the time with us, is that she's able to speak and be heard, be understood, right? Yeah. Not that you can solve it necessarily, or that you could do whatever it is that she might be looking for, other than that you're understanding with her, you're bearing with her in communication. And listening.
Yeah, guys, did it ever occur to anybody why in 1 Peter 3 there it talks about husbands understanding wives, and it doesn't say anything about wives understanding husbands? Now, do you have any inkling why that might be?
I would like it, but yeah, no, I don't know.
So. Yeah, it means we're going to have a hard time understanding our wives, and they're going to have, they've got us figured out pretty well.
There you go.
Yeah.
Venus and Mars, brothers, and Venus and Mars.
I guess, okay. Yeah.
Hair of the dog, Lloyd.
Okay. What was that?
Nothing. Sorry.
Hair of the dog, Lloyd. Hair of the dog.
Oh, okay. Dumb and Dumber. Right?
No, it's Shining. No? It's Shining.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't watch. I've never watched The Shining. It came from The Shining?
Yeah. Whatever.
All right. Goodness. What are we doing?
My mind didn't go Dumb and Dumber.
All right.
Though. It might have been from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
Okay.
My mind
right.
went there.
Could be.
Number 12. A lack of or unenjoyable intimacy kills marriage. Talk to me.
These are things we do not speak about.
Well, we kind of got to.
Yeah. God has given us a design for enjoying intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And man, have we botched it big time, just as a human race. And we're enjoying things in ways that God has not prescribed us to enjoy things, right? There's the uniqueness of marriage is that there's an intimacy that comes with that, that's not meant to be enjoyed outside of, you know, heterosexual monogamous marriage between one man and one woman. Mm-hmm. And man, the world would be just such a different place if we would live the way God has called us to live in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the church has gone through its stages at various times and various places in history of making sex a bad word, and that it's this thing that we don't speak of, and it's kind of icky even, and it's kind of this necessary thing that has to happen in marriage, but that's not really why you get married. I would beg to differ. Paul says this is actually a reason,
right? Yep.
A big reason why you get married, and then goes on to say that it's a way that Satan will kill your marriage.
Yep.
If you do not continue, like, attending to this this privilege in marriage. And so it means more than I think we think it does.
Totally.
In a sacred sense. Mm-hmm. In the intended design sense.
Right.
There's a lot there that boosts the one flesh concept.
Yeah. Which is a spiritual thing as much as physical.
Well, right. That's the weird thing, right? The spirit is uniquely involved in this thing. So yeah.
For sure.
Matters. Yeah.
If you go all the way back to the beginning, right? You know, God created, like, you know, there was day one, it was morning, evening, and it was good, and day two, morning, evening, it was good, so on and so forth, and then he creates man, and then one thing that's not good is that man is alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he creates woman as a helpmate, which means a like opposite for man.
Mm-hmm. That's
not a subservient helpmate, but a like
companion
opposite, right?
Fitted.
Right.
Not to get too crazy here.
Yeah.
Fitted for a man.
Yeah.
I'm not following you, David.
and then when he does that, then God says that a man will leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, and the two flesh will become one. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but like that's the first thing in creation that God instituted after creation was done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was it the man and the woman would become one flesh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing, God tells them to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And then the third thing is, you know, have dominion over the, subdue the earth and have dominion over it. So get married, get intimate and have kids, and go to work.
Get married, yeah. Get right? Crazy.
Get busy.
Yeah.
So
get
so
dying.
I mean, these are the building blocks of society, of a healthy society.
Jesus even refers to it in one of the Gospels when he quotes, you know, that. He uses it in the context, speaking of sexual intimacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we know that the two becoming one flesh absolutely is intended to mean all that,
yeah,
that maybe we've been taught it doesn't.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, this is just two people doing life together.
Yeah.
No, it's deeper than that.
And so oftentimes, you know, in marriage counseling, you have couples come and they get this issue and that issue, hopefully sooner rather than later, I'll just flat out ask them, how's your sex life? You know, how are you doing in that? And, well, So that's a warning. anybody that comes.
Come prepared to answer that question.
Right. Is
what you're saying?
So, well, but the thing is, too, is that seems to me to be kind of one of those things that is kind of a bellwether, that if that's not working, that you need to do some plowing someplace else and find out why that's not working, because it should be working. You know, that's kind of one of those things that when you flip on the switch, the light should come on. And if the light's not coming on, it's time to kind of track down the problem as to why. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But belt weather doesn't make sense. So
sorry.
No, what is it? What is belt weather?
What is a belt weather? It's just an indicator.
Yeah, an indicator.
Huh. Like a siren.
Well,
kind of like a siren.
Siren can be an indicator.
All right.
Okay. Okay. Nagging kills marriage.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Also true. Yes, it does. Kills a lot of things in marriage.
None of us want to say. I've heard that it could. It can. No, I'm just kidding. Can't relate to
it. None of us have any experience with that.
None whatsoever.
You know, which, by the way, goes both ways. It's normally attributed wrongly one way, but it's not true.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to say stereotypes exist for a reason.
Okay. Chad said that.
Not, wow.
I didn't even laugh. David didn't either. So just want that for
mostly
the
facetious.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything about this one.
Yeah.
Too much talk and careless talk kill marriage.
Whoa, too much talk?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if it's meant in the context of it's being paired here with careless talk, then yeah, there's times when our emotions are leading us and not our brains. And in those moments, we would do well to filter before we open our yappers.
Yeah, James talks about being slow to speak. Totally. There's times when you just have to, like, I've even learned there's times where I wanted to, let's get to the bottom of this right here and now. Mm-hmm. And I'm still kind of, at level 10. And, you know, it's like, this isn't a good time to try to work this out.
Yeah, right.
We shouldn't let the sun go down on our anger. But there's times when it's better to, let's pause for a minute. Let's, get things in check and come back and revisit this.
Yeah, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube when this thing comes out and it's heard.
A lot of stupid stuff comes out when you're.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mrs. Hickman is so good at this. Mm. Her phrase is, and I've heard it, I don't like to hear it at the time, is, we should talk about this later. Or we can talk about this later. That's how she puts it.
It's a wise woman.
We can talk about this later.
Right, yeah. Right.
And she's some things, right. That's good.
Yep, yep, definitely. Okay, spending little time with your spouse kills marriage.
Mm. True. And spending too much time with your spouse kills marriage. Can we add that to this?
Okay, why don't you explore that a little bit.
Well, obviously,
second part.
Obviously, too little means that you guys aren't doing much of the other things on this list well. Right? Like, you need to actually be together, doing life together for all the meaningful stuff to happen that's been designed. One of the things that I will tell people, though, that are getting too much on each other's nerves that do everything together is that they need to find something outside of their spouse. Like, there's a proper balance for, there's a season, even in marriage. So, that's all.
Yeah, everybody needs to breathe.
Part of the problem could be that you're just around each other too much.
Okay.
Because we're all annoying people.
Well, that's the old thing about, the guy that retires and he says, honey, I think I'll stay around the kitchen and help you do the dishes and stuff like that. She says, no, I'm used to you
kitchen's
going
mine.
Off to work. Yeah, go ahead, go find something to do.
Right. No, my wife would do this when I got the chimney business because it was seasonal.
Okay.
So half the year we wouldn't see each other at all. Mm-hmm. And I would hear our marriage sucks. We never see each other. And then the other half of the year, I never left the house. And she'd be like, you need to leave. Our marriage sucks. And it's like, we got to figure out this balance thing, man.
Okay, being too independent-minded kills marriage.
Again, the two flesh are one.
Yeah.
And you can't be independent when you're married.
So is there a me in marriage? I'm, asking.
There's a
starts
we.
With an M and it ends with an E. So technically, yeah.
Can't spell marriage without me. Is that what you're
saying? Well, I'm just thinking.
That was very quick-witted, Brent.
Sorry, I just.
Yeah, you're known for that.
There's no I in team, but there is a me in marriage. So, no, I'm thinking there's the idea that you can live separate lives. And I think that there's a real danger in that idea. And there's that happens sometimes with couples where when they become empty nesters, it kind of crashes in on them all of a sudden. It's like, well, we don't even really know each other or have anything in common or, we haven't really fostered any kind of a relationship apart from, kids and work and things like that. And so that kind of independence is not good. You find your identity in your work and your parenting or your that kind of thing. And then you don't really have any kind of real relationship together. So. Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, love for partying, money, impulse buying, and financial indiscipline kills marriage.
What number is that one, by the way? What number are we on?
17.
17. 17. Well, how are we doing?
I think we're doing fine.
Okay.
Lost track of the
I
count.
Haven't even thought about it. That's true.
Then we know we're doing okay. Okay, love for partying, money, impulse buying, and financial indiscipline kills marriage.
Yeah, especially when it's just, if it's both of you that do those things, you're probably just going to ruin your finances. But when it's just one's very much like, no, we need to save, and the other person's like, woo, we need to, throw caution to the wind, let's go get this. That creates problems.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And oftentimes in a marriage, you'll have a Scottish accountant on one side and somebody that just wants to, spend money and live and love life, on the other. And
so what is a Scottish accountant?
Apparently me.
Well,
I'm not familiar with that term.
Okay.
Like somebody that's kind of tight with money?
Not,
is that?
Yeah.
Okay. I would never characterize somebody the Scottish like that.
Frugal.
So I just want that clear. It's just an expression. So
it's an accountant with a kilt.
An accountant with a kilt. Yeah.
So that's all, Brent.
Frugal. No, I know what I got it. I knew what it meant.
So what happens though is if there is indiscipline, and you guys have all seen this, when couples come and they've got, you know, layers of issues, but if finances are going bad, that is just a ton of bricks on top of everything else, right?
Yeah.
So that's something to
Figuring out how to do finances as a couple is important too. Again, if there's one person that's doing it all, and the other person's not really aware of what's going on. That's how it was, like, growing up. My dad took care of things, and, you know, it's just the way it was, and, you know, kept it from everybody else. So we had no idea about anything ever, and that's kind of weird. But
yeah, and I think, you know, there's a certain thing where you need to be, even if you have different dispositions towards it, you need to be kind of on the same page.
Yeah.
Because if there's a Scottish accountant on one side and the profligate spender on the other side, they're both going to resent each other. You know, the tightwad resents the spender, and the spender resents the tightwad.
Right. Right.
So there has to be some kind of, you know, oneness there. Okay, this is a good one. Exposing your spouse's inadequacies to your parents or siblings kills marriage.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah, they shall leave their mother and father, and the two shall become one flesh is something. The leave and cleave idea is something people don't do very often. And I bring that up in counseling too. Like, you know, if you go to your parents and complain about your spouse, you're going to sabotage their relationship and potentially your marriage at some point. So,
Yeah, I actually do. I actually started employing vows at the beginning of a wedding ceremony to the people sitting there first, to the families.
Yep.
And it's along the lines of, like, do you agree to encourage this couple and to lead them on to better, spur them on to love and to good works for each other and to pray for them. And I do the vows with the people who think that they're just like an innocent party, because they're the ones who are, you know, can help kill it.
Sure.
So yeah, they need to know that a lot of this has to do with them and the way that they play into this.
And they just have to let them go.
So, that brings up a good point that entertaining those kinds of complaints kills that person's marriage. Like, if you're the parent that entertains those kind of complaints without encouraging, you know, reconciliation or, you know, whatever is needed, and just to automatically take a side.
Right.
Yeah, that also is a marriage killer.
Yeah, I've even gone to the point where in marriage counseling, I want to meet with the parents on both sides and make sure, maybe preach that just a little bit stronger than that.
That they know what they're responsible
for. Realize that you got to let them go, and that they've got to work out the problems. And if there's issues that they come to you with, send them to somebody else. Right. You know,
Or send them to the truth. Right.
Yeah.
Send them back to the things that Scripture has for that spouse. Yeah.
Okay. Spurning correction and reprimand kills marriage. Spurning. There's one of those.
I don't know.
That's a Bible word, right? Spurning.
Reprimand. I like that.
Well, there's two of them. Hey, those didn't even come from me.
No, I know.
Rejecting or refusing something or someone with disdain or contempt. What's up?
Spurn. See how easy that is? Just one word does it all.
No, Brent.
That's good.
To spurn is not just to say no, but to do so in a way that shows strong dislike, disrespect, or scorn.
Yes.
So to rebel against it.
Yeah. There you go. So how does that work? How does a correction and reprimand, how does it work in a marriage?
Bless you.
Thank you.
Well, this goes back to, you know, something I said earlier, where, you know, sometimes our default kind of position can be that you know, my spouse is against me.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever correction comes, if your default is that they're against you, then you're going to be less likely to receive any kind of correction. But if your starting point is, well, they're for me, we're on the same team here,
right,
you might be more apt to receive some correction and to pay attention to it.
Yeah, I think if you've got a dynamic where you've got like a parent-child dynamic in a marriage where you're correcting the other person, it's not a, you know, so I would be careful in even just the idea of correcting or reprimanding.
Yeah.
It's a weird way to even
it is.
To phrase that. But you have to be able to, when you're at odds, or you know there's something they're doing that's causing harm or that's hurting you or whatever it is, we need to be able to talk about those things in marriage. But if it's that parent child kind of model, that's probably gonna kill your marriage at some point too. So
if I've seen one thing that I think is just a tripwire of younger couples getting married, it's the man's inability to receive criticism. I mean, it's just, it's like criticism just devastates. And I know criticism is hard and all that stuff, but if you think about it, you know, in a Christian marriage, the wife knows that she's, you know, submissive to the husband, and he's kind of top of the pile. And if, you know, the people that are under you can't squeak, that's a bad thing, you know. And so I just think that there needs to be an understanding that women shouldn't criticize their, you know, wife shouldn't criticize their husbands and all that, but make it constructive. But it's going to happen. And when it happens, is to be able to receive, not be devastated by it and retaliate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
usually I'm defensive at first.
Yep.
And I'm angry.
Yep.
And then I think about it for a couple of days, and it's probably just the Holy Spirit, you know, doing his work.
Bearing down on
And then him. You realize, you know what, that's correct, and I need to fix this.
I have found that if somebody other than my wife brings a critique to me, I can handle it pretty well.
Sure.
Ooh. If it's her, then it's like, what's up?
Yeah.
Like, right. Go in the kitchen.
I don't relate to that at all. Not right? Even a little.
And it's the same thing the other way, too. Sure. Like, I can say something, then someone else will say the same thing to her, and she'll receive it, and I'll be like, I just said that to you.
Well, that's partly because their opinion
totally
matters most.
Totally.
And
true.
And so, yeah, when it comes from them, it just feels so devastating.
Yep, yep.
And
you're not qualified to say this.
The way we do that is important, but to never do it though, that then you get to that role of bitterness.
Yep, yep, yep.
To, you know, so you got to work through these things, but doing it in a loving and a humble way is, you know, that's the part you got to figure out.
Yeah, and the other thing is that I don't think that the way that criticism goes in a marriage is symmetrical, because you know when a wife speaks to a husband, it's kind of like he gets the words, he processes and all that stuff. But when he speaks something, it kind of, or should, hopefully, goes right into her heart. And so that needs to be, that's part of that 1 Peter 3 yep. thing of understanding, you know, that needs to be, it can't be, well, she said this to me this way, so I've got to say that back to her that way, right? It's just, it doesn't work that way. Mm. But there has to be a way, like Brent said, of you know, for this to happen in a healthy way. Okay, always wearing a sad face and being moody kills marriage.
I suppose.
Uh-oh. I'm looking at this next one.
Skipping ahead, Dan?
Okay, so who wants to talk about sad face and being moody killing a marriage?
I don't know if it kills a marriage, but it doesn't make you real excited to do life with that person.
Right? Okay. Right? Well, but, you know,
I guess in turn then could eventually kill the marriage. But
right. Yeah. All killing of a marriage doesn't have to be
a
shot out of a gun.
Right.
It can be something that kills over months and years.
Most
right?
divorces happen long before papers are ever signed.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I'm going to read this. Extreme feminism advocacy kills marriage.
I thought that was a weird one when I saw it in the list. I mean, I agree with it, but it, like, that's what an odd one to throw
in there. We're just talking about roles and why roles are so important. Sure, if that's the context.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, extreme feminism in the sense where you reverse roles and now the wife is trying to take the role that God has given the man.
Or you redefine the role.
Yeah, maybe it just was worded differently.
Well, and if you go back to that's part of the curse. Right in Genesis 3 is it says that the woman's desire will be for the man, which means it will be to usurp the role that God has given the man, and the man will lord it over.
Yeah, there's a power trip.
Right, there's a role reversal that's a result of you know, sin entering the world.
Yeah, me and my wife, I'll just be honest, she doesn't care. We've experienced this for a lot of our marriage because, you know, I'm the dude and I have this thing in me that's like I got to lead, and then she comes from a very independent mom and a very kind of feministic mom. And her dad, of course, walked out on her when she was one.
Well, there you
go. So she was raised by mom, and guys are a bunch of, they're no good. Marriage sucks and dudes suck. And so for years, me and Carrie, and we weren't strong Christians for years. So we just had no idea of, you know, God's intended design and roles and why it mattered. We were just on a power trip, constantly butting heads. That was what a lot of our arguments were over, in fact, was just roles and where we belonged in decision-making and leading and things like that. So, yeah, it's a challenge. And I love to see the work that, I mean, this sounds horrible. I'd love to see what God has done in the life of my wife and redeeming that in her and her seeing and embracing as good that which God has made her. She just never knew what it looked like before.
Right. Yeah. Right, sure. Yeah. And just because you're unaware of it doesn't mean that this very strong dynamic that you're talking about isn't there.
For sure.
You know, you come into a marriage and it's there. Yeah, for sure. You might not recognize it, know what it is or anything else. Right, with your thing to be the male and hers having, you know, the thing that you described about coming from a fatherless home and a mother that was kind of take charge and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it's there. Okay, let's flip this to the next one. Male chauvinism kills marriage.
For the same reason.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I think there's been a big movement right now to weed out toxic masculinity out of society right now. And there's a reason for it. It's not, it's not just coming out of the blue. There's an ugly, an ugly way to do manhood. That is kind of this type of thing that's very heavy handed and very ungodly. But now I think we're almost seeing the extreme of men becoming so passive and afraid to be men that now we've got another problem on our hands.
Not everything is toxic that the world calls toxic.
Yeah.
Right. They're, you know, what the world calls toxic masculinity. Some of it is just biblical manhood. Not all of it, but some of it's just biblical manhood and the role that God has given men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you've got the Archie Bunkers of the world.
Oh, totally.
That are like, you know, totally. They're not helping us out much.
No, they're not.
Uncontrolled temper and anger kill marriage.
You know what we could do?
What?
We could take the last five of these and do them tonight with the group.
Okay.
I don't know.
So are we done? Are we out of time?
Is that right or no?
If you're doing it, I don't care.
You're doing it, bro.
I'm not coming tonight.
He's doing it. I'm not coming tonight either. Are you coming tonight?
You're coming. And so are you. We can. We don't have to have these fights online. I'm here. We can do this later.
What was the question?
So if you're a man and you're listening, come to Third Thursday.
That we take the last five of these and do them tonight.
I mean, we do. We have guys that aren't married, right? So I don't know how appropriate it would be. I think it still matters.
But it's good for them to know, even if they're maybe going to be married.
Yeah,
or they know people. That
I agree.
Yeah.
I say we take the last five of these.
Tonight. Okay. So how are we doing time wise?
I think so.
Okay. We're okay time-wise. We're getting in the home stretch here, but
okay. Well, all right. So if we're going to do the last five tonight, then do we want to do them now too?
Oh, I don't care. I was more thinking like we stop and do them tonight.
So
no, actually, I do need to go to the bathroom.
So if
really
we stop, so
I could
if
go.
We stop now, do I get extra credit for next week?
You don't get a bank, you don't get to bank the time, but you get extra credit. We'll give you a gold star on your
trip. There we go. Yeah.
Okay, well we can wrap it up and if there's any guys that are coming tonight's Men Third Thursday, we're going to talk about these last five things that are marriage killers tonight. We're actually on time, guys.
With that and it's pasta bar tonight for those that might be wondering what's on the menu.
Yeah, I just talked to Jim Hoff, and it's linguine with Alfredo and meatballs and brownies, and there's probably
some marinara,
else.
I think he said, marinara, as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Salad, bread.
Fresh bread.
Yeah,
sourdough, fresh sourdough.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, who gets treated to stuff like this, right?
Irene is in the chat, and she says emphatically, no, keep going. Because she's not going to be at Men's Third Thursday.
Okay.
Sorry, Irene.
Yeah. Well, we can connect with you offline and kind of go through these other ones. But
I'll slip you the sheet Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. David will see to it.
Actually, I won't be here. Yeah. They will.
I'll be in Crescent.
Okay. They will. Yeah. I'll be here.
I won't be here either. I'm going to be in Redmond.
Chad will slip you the sheet
Chad
on Sunday.
Will.
Yeah. Just leave it on the desk in the office.
All right. How about you pray us out?
Lord, I thank you for marriage. I thank you for correction. I thank you that we can repent and we can confess and that we don't need to be scared about the things that we see in ourselves and the deficits that we see in our marriages, but that you make everything new and that you empower us to walk in right things that don't kill our marriage. And so we pray for more of that. We pray for more people that are concerned with what you say about marriage and your prescriptions for it than for themselves. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to One Decent Pastor. If you'd like more information about the church, go to our website at thedoor3r.org.